Today is June 24th, 2015, and this is episode number 312 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I am Brian Chaffin, your Huckleberry. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
My little Huckleberry.
Yeah, you know, I can't. I have wanted to be able to deliver that line. I'm your Huckleberry, like Val Kilmer did in Tombstone. I've wanted to do that for years, and there's a number of impressions I can do. I have never come even remotely close to being as awesome as Val Kilmer delivering that line.
Well, you know, you're a professional. I think that with enough practice, you could get it and you could really be our Huckleberry.
Well, no, I can be your Huckleberry.
Yeah.
I'm just not gonna sound as cool telling you so as Val Kilmer did.
All right, well, you work on it. Yeah. Work on it, and then you can be our cool Huckleberry.
I really do like that line. He was so good as Doc Holliday.
Yeah, he was.
He really, really was. Okay, well, that just completely ridiculous note. Music.
Yeah.
Music's been in the headlines. We have, in 3, 4, 5, 6 days, I like to call it. Apple is launching Apple Music.
Right, and there have been a lot of people talking about music because of that.
Yeah, it's true. Lots of negotiations going on. Apple and the headlines a lot. Apple got a lot of bad headlines last week, as indie artists and indie labels were all screaming that Apple not wanting to pay them for the 3-month trial period for Apple Music was going to. Well, the indie label said it would put them out of business. The artist all said that. Working for free for 3 months was unfair.
Right. Yep. That is what they said.
Yep. And they kind of have a point. I mean, I go back and forth. You know, on the one hand, Apple's not bringing any money in to share. So,
right.
So what are they, you know, what are they wanting to get paid from? Well, they're wanting to get paid from Apple's deep pockets.
Right. Which is actually what's going to happen.
Which is what's going to happen. Now, Apple was offering a higher royalty percentage after the 3 months to make up for the 3 months with no money. It was going to be 71.5% in the U.S.
Uh-huh. 73% outside.
Yeah, which, by the way, I've never understood why there's that difference.
I don't know.
If I was a U.S. label.
Value cranky. Of dollars versus euros or something.
Oh, percentages of course. Are percentages.
That's true.
But nonetheless, Apple's going to be paying more money. You know, Apple normally pays out 70% to app developers, to publishers, to the movie studios, to the record labels for iTunes, the regular iTunes stuff. Apple pays out 70%. So this, you know, the 73% and the 71.5%, those were going to be in compensation for that not getting paid for a new customer's first 3 months.
Right, right.
Which, over the lifetime of a customer, this is, of course, assuming that Apple Music actually lasts, right? Over the lifetime of a customer, that would eventually add up to more money.
Yeah, that makes sense. And as the service gets older and older, the number of people that are not paying the 3 months gets smaller and smaller, just as a general percentage.
Right, absolutely. The after the first 3 months, the percentage of streamers, i.e. listeners, will become an ever smaller percentage of all the streamers. I'm sorry, new streamers. The percentage of streamers who are new and in the 3 month free trial will become ever smaller in perpetuity for the lifetime of the service, by definition. So, you know, It seemed fair, and it seemed fair from the standpoint of Apple's not bringing any money in, so you know there's nothing to share. But there is a flip side to that coin.
Do tell.
The flip side to that coin is Apple offers these services to bolster its ecosystem and sell more hardware. And Apple sells that hardware to profit. Unlike, you know, a lot of companies which sell hardware at break even or even a loss.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know, the slimmest of margins at best, and then try to make it up on services. Apple actually offers all these services, many of which are free. Apple Music is not, but many of which are free, so that it can sell hardware for which it charges a premium.
Right. So Apple's model and Amazon's model are opposites of each other. Apple sells to sell hardware. Amazon sells their Kindles at what we presume is a very small margin or a loss to sell services.
Right. Well, and Apple, you know, Amazon's goal isn't to make money, clearly. So, you know, who knows what the heck they're doing.
That's a whole nother show right there.
That's a whole nother show, right. So anyway, to me, the indie artist had a point, and they both didn't have a point. The not point is that Apple's not bringing you money, so what are you wanting? And the point that they do have is, why should they have to work for free when Apple is making money indirectly from these services? So, you know, it's kind of a tough call. And then, of course, we had on... So Anton Newcombe, who is the founder, lead singer, songwriter, you know, principal, he is the Brian Jonestown Massacre.
Uh-huh.
Everyone else just plays in his world. And he went on a Twitter rant.
Diatribe,
yeah. He called Apple satanic. And you know, he had all these, like, Anton Newcombe is an interesting person. He had a lot of facts wrong. For one thing, he thinks that Apple had $700 billion in cash, which... isn't true. Apple does have almost $200 billion in cash, and that is just an unimaginable...
It's a crazy amount of money.
Yeah, yeah, but it's not $700 billion. And, he had some wrong ideas, but, you know, he's Anton Newcombe.
It's Anton. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? And, that got a lot of attention... in a lot of the press, there was a lot of press, including some mainstream press, were paying attention because, you know, here's a prominent indie musician who's calling Apple satanic and criticizing Apple. So, of course, that's going to get some headlines. And but then on Sunday, Taylor Swift laid out the Swift bomb.
I like that. She laid out the Swift bomb. Yeah, that's so her Swift bomb was a post on her Tumblr blog, where she said that she was essentially taking up the mantle for indie artists and small artists, and calling Apple out and saying, "Look, you need to pay people for this stuff."
And yeah, and she tried. She made the point that, you know, this really isn't so much about me because I'm pretty well off because I've had 5 successful albums, but for artists who are a lot less successful, you know, you guys need to step it up.
Right. And then only hours after her blog post went up, Eddie Q takes to Twitter and he says, yeah, we're going to pay artists for that 3-month window.
And then he did an interview with Billboard. Now, we don't know what the percentage is that Apple's going to be paying during that 3-month window. I have a feeling it's actually going to be not the full 70%.
I would assume you are correct.
But he said that Apple would continue to pay the higher 71.5% and 73% rates that we mentioned earlier once the trial period is over.
Okay, so that's nice.
It is nice. It truly is nice. And then we had some new complaining. Coming up, Billy Corgan. Corgan. Keep wanting to stick an I in there. Apparently there's no I in Corgan.
The Corgan. I is silent in Corgan.
He doesn't even have the I in his name.
See, that's how silent it is. You can't even see it.
Silent and deadly. By the way, can I go on this complete tangent for just the briefest second? It drives me nuts. There's a hard cider brand, and I can't remember the brand name. And so this to me is defeating this is the proof that it's not always true that as long as people are talking about you, it doesn't matter what they say. Mm-hmm. But it's a hard cider brand, and they go, it's like, what's the tag? Strong. Now I'm just messing up my little rant.
Well, you know, luckily we have top men.
Yeah, it's a good thing I had this prepped. It's Smith and Forge hard cider, so I am going to go ahead and give their brand a little name. It's a strong, sturdy, but not too sweet. This drives me nuts because the but says that it's a contradiction, but mm-hmm. there's nothing about strong or sturdy that is sweet. So it should be strong, sturdy, and not too sweet.
Yes. Okay. I'm with you.
But strong, sturdy, but not too sweet it's just wrong. And I see it on the TV all the time. Drives me bananas.
Well, I guess this is why we need therapy.
Strong, sturdy, but not too sweet. Doesn't make any sense. How did that get out of the planning stage? How did that get past whatever focus group they used? How did this get past the director and the writer? I mean, there are probably 100 people who had to sign off of that nonsense being put in multiple commercials.
Okay, just to show you how easy it is for something like that to end up happening, I have two words for you.
Yeah.
Think different.
It's true, but if you stick a colon in between those two words, it actually is grammatically correct.
But there is no colon between think and different.
That's just nitpicking, isn't it?
Yes. I'm just being mostly pedantic.
It's so true, though. It should be think differently.
Yes, it should.
But I've always assumed that was definitely something that someone very specifically discussed and signed off on.
I'm sure you're right. Just like someone very specifically signed off on got milk.
Fair enough. But that's, you know, that's vernacular.
Yeah, that's vernacular.
So, you know, that's a little bit different. Strong, sturdy, but not too sweet is just wrong. It's grammatically wrong. It's not vernacular. It's just wrong. It's incorrect. It does not say what they think it says. It doesn't make any sense. It drives me nuts. Of course, I'm talking about it. Is this going to sell them any cider? I hope not. Don't boycott this brand out of grammar solidarity.
You know, this is probably just killing them because as of now, they know for certain you aren't going to be buying their product. And yes, I totally understand what I'm saying there.
It's true. We got to have Backbeat Media see if they can't get us a sponsorship with them.
Yeah, I want to see what happens when they send you a six pack so that you can try it out and talk about it on the air.
Okay.
This music. Is my pedantic beer. Bah!
Music.
Music.
Music. Billy Corgan. Corgan. Keep
doing that. Silent Eye.
This is how we got here. He went on this sort of like rant with, who did he actually interview with? Let me pull that up. Top men here.
Top
yeah. men. Yeah, we got your top men. Oh, come on. Let's see here. Oh, sweet. I may have lost the article. That's pretty cool.
All right. Well, then just make it up. It's the internet.
So he said basically that musicians have all the power and that musicians don't realize that they have all the power, and that that it's when they realize that they have all the power, there's going to be, you know, all sorts of interesting things that actually happen. And Nikki Sixx, who is the bassist of Billy Corgan, of course, is the Corgan, is the the principal songwriter singer of Smashing Pumpkins, although they may be defunct these days. Nikki Sixx, who is the bass player of Mötley Crüe.
I'm very proud of you for getting the proper pronunciation. Yep. The umlauts do change how it sounds.
It does. You might know them as Motley Crue. He basically said that, you know, Apple's got a lot of money and that Apple needs to do that. Apple was doing the right thing by ponying up for this free period. But underneath there is for both these folks is this idea that music has value. And I'm not sure that that's actually the case anymore.
Well, value is a very subjective thing. So I can think something has a lot of value, while at the same time, you do not.
Right. And of course, I personally do value music. I've created music. I've recorded music.
I have your album.
You do. I've sweated over music. I love music. I love listening to music. I love playing music. I believe that it has value. I don't believe in pirating music. I don't want people to pirate music. I don't want people who, it drives me nuts that people think that they're entitled to my work for free. That drives me nuts. And this sentiment is sort of, you know, percolating with a lot of musicians right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that, you know, particularly over the last 15 years, since the dawn and fall of Napster,
mm-hmm.
the perceived value of music has collapsed.
Yeah, it really has. I was going to say it sure looks like it has, but that's not accurate. It has collapsed.
But you've got Napster was, you know, the record labels were doing everything they could to jack up prices. I remember back in the 80s, Tom Petty kept his master reels at his house. And I could be getting some of the details wrong. And I learned about this long before the age of the internet. So I have no idea how much any of this is true. But he was demanding that his record label not bump the price of his album from $6.99 to $7.99, which is what they wanted to do, or maybe it was $7.99 to $8.99. It was that dollar.
And, interesting.
And he wouldn't give up his reels. He apparently was guarding them with a gun. Again, details could be wrong. The whole story could be a lie. And because he wanted the label to agree not to raise the price of his album, not to send it up another dollar. And, you know, but that particular, I mean, obviously it was inevitable that prices rise. And throughout the 90s, the record labels steadily jacked up prices. You know, it was $9.99 for CDs, you know, $9.99 and $10.99, $11.99, $12.99. And by the end of the 90s, a lot of CDs were costing $17.99, $18.99, $20.
Well, I remember when CDs first came out, the price was ridiculous, and then it dropped quickly and started to rise again.
Yeah, it did. And it's kind of interesting because what was happening, while the labels were ratcheting up the price of CDs, the cost to record, manufacture, and distribute music,
it was going down.
It was going down. And they were making money hand over fist. Yippee-ki-yay. You know, things are just awesome. And they were pushing up record prices so high that, you know, that it had a... It made the ability to pirate and steal music, you know, to get music for quote-unquote free, all the more desirable because prices were just out of control. Like you look right now, if you go to a you know, LOL CD store,
if you can find one,
I've got a couple out here on my side of the glass.
On your side of the glass. I'll have to look on my side of the glass, see if there's one over here.
Actually, I'm gonna look on iTunes because we all have access to the iTunes. So let's see here. New music from Breaking Benjamin. $9.99. New album. It was $9.99. I mean you go to the CD store. Albums currently are gonna be, you know, $7.99, $8.99, $9.99, maybe $14.99. Maybe. And that's gonna be something either very popular or with a lot of like a double album or something. Here we go. $9.99. Let me get away from the special deals on iTunes and actually look at something that's not being promoted. How about
well you're looking that up. I checked to see if there is an actual music store like a record store, a CD store, whatever in Boulder.
Uh-huh.
Because I haven't seen one around. Turns out there is. Albums on the Hill.
Not my album, $9.99.
Hey, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's actually what we released it at. But let's see. Let's go Brian Jonestown Massacre. Right? Let's look at what their prices are currently on the iTunes. $9.99, $17.99. It's a double album. $9.99, $9.99. Yeah. So, I mean, albums right now are a lot less than they were at the end of the 90s. But Napster first gave this notion, first introduced the notion to people that they could get large amounts of music, not just from their buddies, not just from their friends from sharing, but anything they wanted for free.
Which was just amazing for the average music listener because all of a sudden you had all the music.
Yeah, you know, and most people couldn't care less about the idea that they're stealing. This is just a reality. We're seeing the result of that more and more all the time.
And a lot of people didn't see it as stealing. They I still run into people that think because something's on the internet, it's there because it's there for everyone.
Yeah, it should be free. Yeah, you know, yeah. The mindset there boggles my mind, but whatever. That's definitely not supposed to be the point of this particular conversation. And Napster ended up getting shut down, which seemed like a big win for the record labels. In a piece that I've been working on, I said that you know they won the battle and lost the war. They just didn't know it. They didn't know that they lost the war. The next step in devaluing the perceived value, lowering the perceived value of music, was quite frankly iTunes. Because iTunes introduced us to the idea of being able to buy just singles, which, you know, a lot of labels and a lot of artists hated.
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, they'd have these full albums where there'd be like two or three songs that were really good, and then just the rest of it that we had to buy just to get the two or three songs we wanted.
Yeah, in the 80s and 90s in particular, especially pop bands or popular bands when it came to rock and roll,
uh-huh.
It was common practice that, you know, you work on, you know, you come up with two or three good songs and then you just throw a bunch of crap on the album to fill it out.
Right.
And, you know, giddy up, they make the same money. What do they care? You know, there was definitely a lot of corruption and nastiness in the music and the establishment music industry. There always has been.
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
Right. But that's another tangent too. So Apple allowed us to do what we wanted, which was to be able to buy a single song for 99 cents and eventually $1.29. So, you know, it's in between the two prices.
Right.
And, you know, and the prices eventually started coming down. We just went over those prices just now. And then I think that the next big step was streaming music, where people could, either just get access to various streaming channels where they're not picking stuff, or actually able to stream what it is they wanted. When that came along, you know, there's various iterations out there of free services, free ad supported services, and sources where you can pay a subscription and get access to, you know, a lot of material. That to me was like, you know, on the one hand, it established a floor, right? Because now it said, now the idea isn't so much that you can get everything you want for free. Now the idea is you have to pay something for it.
You know, we've seen this already when Sirius and XM Radio came on the scene. People balked at paying for the service because they get radio for free.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And so while it established a floor, the flip side is that it sort of brought this message home. And that message was that music is so unimportant. Music has so little value. Now you don't even need to own it.
Yeah, it's not even worth owning.
It's not even worth owning. So much better to just pay a subscription and have access to all of it, and none of it's yours.
And there was a time where people would not have gone for that at all, but that was before the value of music had diminished down to this level.
Well, Apple used to talk about that. Apple used to talk about the fact that renting your music is not what people want to do. And it wasn't exactly at the time.
No, but it is now.
But it is now, yeah. It is now. And Apple is going to be, that's what Apple Music is. Apple Music is, you're paying a subscription and you have access to some 30 million songs. You get a radio station, a global radio station that's being produced by actual humans.
Mm-hmm. Get
playlists that are put together by actual humans. And you can stream a bunch of music and, you know, you're going to pay $10 a month or $15 a month for six of you.
That's a pretty sweet deal.
And it makes music worth less money in the eyes of consumers, whether or not they realize it. And this is something that I don't think artists, especially those artists who have their start, especially those successful artists who had their start in an earlier era when it was the music labels that are in control, instead of the technology companies. And that's part of the premise of my piece, is that it's technology companies like Google, like Apple, like, you know, maybe to a lesser extent, Facebook, certainly YouTube, which is owned by Google. You know, these are the companies that are in control of the music industry these days.
Right. And it sure looks to me like these various companies are fighting to be the controller of the music industry.
Yeah. Really? Do you think they're fighting over that?
I think that's the end goal. Huh. Right now, I think they're fighting for market share. But once this whole streaming music market kind of stabilizes,
mm-hmm.
and it shakes out to where we know who the real players are, then I think those players are going to start going after each other to try and take that share of the market, and then ultimately be the single big player.
Well, you know, we definitely have right now. Golly, you know, do you remember back when people would actually talk about record labels? Like, oh my God, they signed with Atlantic.
Yes, I actually do remember.
You know, or you know, there was RCA, or there was Sony, or you know,
or someone switches a label.
That was a big deal. You know, PolyGram picked up someone. Right? By the way, Anemone is a fantastic song by the Brian Jonestown Massacre. I cannot get enough of that song.
So I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes.
Fantastic. It's spelled, I'm going to spell
it's A-N-E-N-O-M-E. Is that right?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes, it is. Top men. No
I'd
one talks about this stuff
my
anymore.
Eyes to spell that, just so you know.
What's that?
I had to close my eyes to spell that.
Oh, fair enough. No one talks about that stuff anymore. Right. That was back when producers mattered. Producers still matter, by the way. Producers still matter. The studio that an album gets recorded in still matters. You can do a lot of amazing things out of your home, but you can do even more amazing things at a professional studio with professional recording gear and professionals running that gear.
Yes.
Right. So that stuff still matters. But there once was a time when we knew about that stuff. We talked about record producers. Jimmy Iovine got his start as a producer, and his name, people knew his name because he was a producer. You know, right. Rick Rubin, producer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You and I probably know who Rick Rubin is today because we knew about him back in, you know, once upon a time. But if he was accomplishing the same amazing things today as a brand new producer, we probably wouldn't know. We wouldn't know anything about him.
It's a different market now.
It's a different world now. I mean, this, the music industry has changed. What we talk about now is Spotify or Pandora or Apple Music or Play Music from Google.
Yeah, that's true.
iHeartRadio.
Yeah, where is the music available? Not who had their special touch to make it better.
Yeah, or who's putting it out or where it was recorded. No one knows the names of recording studios anymore, but it used to be Electric Ladyland, Abbey Road Studios. You know, there were probably a dozen studios that I'd heard about.
Oh, how about the ranch? The one that's out here near me.
Sure.
Outside Netherland. I mean, that was a huge thing. Elton John flew to the United States just to record at the ranch.
Sure. No one talks about this stuff anymore. You talk about where you're getting your music. And you know, and it's just, you know, just give me music. Blah, 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 give me music. And this is all part and parcel to the way music has been changing. But the fact is, today, we don't value music as much. And because we don't value music as much, artists don't get paid as much.
But the artists are still valuing their music like they did before.
Some of them.
Yeah, some of them, but then you have the consumers, and they aren't. So you have this problem.
Well, so Billy Corgan saying that Apple should be paying more because their content. So that was part of his argument is that artists record content. By the way, I like and respect Billy Corgan. I like his music. I respect him as a musician. I'm not bagging on him because I don't like him or anything. He's saying that the artists produce the content that is consumed on devices like the iPhone and the iPad. Now, first of all, music is not the killer app for iOS. Killer app for iOS is apps and the internet in your pocket.
Right. Yeah, people love having music on the go.
People do love it, but that's not, you know, that was the killer app for the iPod, but it's not the killer app for the iPhone, and it's not the killer app, but certainly not the killer app for the iPad. And I mean, just music.
You're all wound up, Ryan.
Well, I am because I mean, in part because I do value music so much. It's just it. It's, you know, there's so many factors here. One massive factor is that music is now merely one of many things competing for our entertainment dollars.
Okay, so what we have here is a problem where people are equating the value of the music and the worth of the music, and they are not the same now.
Kind of mostly pedanticize you there because I think they're the same. I mean, worth and value. What are you arguing?
Value, I think, is more of a sentimental thing, whereas worth is what people will pay for something.
I reject your premise, sir.
That's okay. I have no problem with you being wrong. I still love you.
But so you know, today we have, I mean, go back to the 90s with the, well, go back maybe even starting in the 80s, of course, with the rise of console gaming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, console gaming took the place of a lot of record listening.
Yeah, that's true.
Cable, yeah, TV.
People would sit around and listen to music, then they sat around and played video games.
Yeah, or they sat around watching TV.
Sometimes those paths crossed,
yep,
because we had MTV.
Yep.
Believe it or not, there was a time, people, when MTV played videos of songs.
Yeah, that's true. The music videos. It was interesting. We have, and it, you know, so this, we started having all these competitions for our entertainment dollars in the 80s and 90s, as, you know, the record labels were jacking prices up. And today, goodness, we've got in our pockets, we've got games, we've got news, we've got movies in our pocket.
We do. Books, movies.
People spend a lot of time watching movies when even 10 years ago they might have been listening to music. Watching videos, watching YouTube, just, you know, mindlessly watching crap on YouTube.
Yeah, that's what we've become.
Yeah, we have games everywhere we go, and we have access to live sports everywhere we go.
Kitten videos.
Kitten videos too. Yeah, that's for sure. We have access to places where we can yell at each other and call each other names and Nazis and things. So, you know, we have that. We have access to that all the time. So it is no wonder at all that music has less value from that standpoint. And that's not even touching the technology issues that we mentioned before. They all go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
They all go hand in hand. People are willing to pay less money for music than they were. This is a fact. And if you're an artist today, saying that you should be paid more money just because you should be paid more money is weird. It's delusional.
Yeah, true. We're seeing that you're not going to get paid that money. It's the money just isn't there now because, yeah, people aren't paying that much.
And it's funny. I argued. It's one reason why I'm so worked up about this is because I kind of argued this from the other side for a long time, because I'm so against piracy, because I'm so against the way people feel entitled to things for free.
Mm-hmm.
I would, when people would say, you know, artists just have to find a new way to make money, you know, the music, the drummer, Brad Phillips, he's a great drummer. He's the drummer for the Atomic Love Bombs when I was still in the band. He said 7 years ago, 6 years ago, whenever it was, people should, the CDs need to become calling cards, and bands just need to make their money from playing live shows. The music becomes the calling card. Recorded music becomes the calling card, and if you want to make money, it's got to be from live shows. And I rejected that at the time because I felt like, you know, people A, shouldn't be stealing music, and B, that CDs had value. But the longer we go, the less value recorded music has. And live shows become the way that the artists make money. And of course, you know, supporting them with buying t-shirts and, you know, hoodies and special prints, right, and, you know, buying physical copies of vinyl, because it sounds warmer, man.
It sounds warmer.
And, you know, so, I don't know.
It's all analog, man.
The industry is in flux right now, and I don't have a lot of sympathy for artists who say they should get paid more just because they should get paid more, because the money's not, mm-hmm, there. Consumers are not ponying up for this, and they're not buying devices to listen to the music. They're buying some devices. I mean, they're buying a Bluetooth speaker to listen to music on. They're buying headphones to listen to music, but they're not, right, buying an iPhone just so they can play music. Playing music is merely one of the things they're going to do on their iPhone.
Right. Yeah. That it's a incidental feature. for many people.
Increasingly so.
Yeah. I mean, I have music on my iPhone. I don't remember the last time I played it. I don't even know what music is on my iPhone. It's probably free songs from Starbucks.
That's funny. I have all of my songs. I've got the 128 gig iPhone 6, and because I don't pirate music, I have all of my songs. All of my music is on my iPhone, and I listen to it whenever I go out riding.
Okay, well, that's cool.
And if I'm going to listen to something in my car, it's on my iPhone too. So, but even still, it still represents a small fraction of what I do with my mobile devices. And I think that I'm not projecting. I'm definitely not wanting to project there. I think that for an increasingly large percentage of us, listening to music represents a decreasingly small percentage of what we do with our mobile devices.
I think that's probably a pretty safe assumption.
And in that environment, the money is not going to be coming from consumers. And that, you know, that what you know, it's interesting, Jeff. I think that the age of the wealthy rock star is in decline, and we're going to even see fewer Taylor Swifts.
Well, it sure seems to me like we're seeing a lot of artists that are popular, but they're not mega stars.
Yeah, to a very limited extent, we're actually seeing an increase in the ability for small stars to become working artists.
Jonathan Coulton, first person that comes to mind for that. I mean, he started off as a guy that was just making up songs every day and putting them online.
Oh yeah, that guy, right?
Yeah, the guy that does Mr. Fancy Pants.
Yeah,
I love that song.
I was thinking more along the lines of live acts.
Well, he is a live act now.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Yeah, so he went from, hey, I'm recording this stuff and putting it on YouTube, to eventually he goes on tour, and he's a name that people want for shows.
Are you familiar with Mike Dowdy?
Yes.
Do you know what he's doing right now? His little living room tour.
No, but I'm suddenly intrigued. I've been to several living room concerts and absolutely love them.
He's doing that basically. He's touring the U.S. By living rooms.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
The idea, by the way, is that an artist, you effectively, it's a cross between providing an artist a venue to play, which is your house, and paying that artist to come play at your house. It's sort of a cross between the two, and so it's a concert for 30, 40, 50, 60 people.
And those can be so cool that it's a much more intimate venue, and it's really laid back, and you're just hanging out with the artist while they perform.
This represents a new way of monetizing your art. This is a new thing. This didn't exist. I don't know when it came into being, but it didn't exist 20 years ago. People weren't doing this 20 years ago. This is definitely something that's made possible by the internet.
Yeah, but this is something I've been doing in like the last 3 years.
Sure.
Yeah. Have you had the chance to go to a living room concert before?
No.
Or a house concert?
No.
You need to find someone hosting one.
Not like this. Go. I've been to plenty of bands playing at someone's house. But, you know, that's a little bit different than what we're talking about.
Yeah. No, if you get to go to a proper house concert sometime, jump at the opportunity. It's really cool. It's a lot of fun.
Fair enough. So, you know, this is just the change. This is the change we're getting, and I guess the reason why I'm not going to say that I'm so passionate about this because it's not. The reason why I'm speaking about it so passionately, the reason why it interests me so much is because I guess I've just been denying for years that music is losing its value. Recorded music is losing its value. I guess I mean maybe that's it. Maybe a lot of our listeners have been ahead of me on this for a long time. I don't know.
But we're helping you work through this process, Brian. We're here for you.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. And I can imagine, especially for you, because you have a past in the music industry, because you've been in a band, you have an album out, that seeing this change is kind of hard. Is it, on some level, it's kind of personal.
It's personal. We you know, the Atomic Love Bombs didn't really make any money off of our album, and we released it ourselves. So, you know, it's not like, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different from artists who have broken out of a region. We were a regional band, you know, and for artists who are bigger than that, or even more successful regionally than we were, it's probably a harder transition. It's, you know, the big thing for me is philosophy here. I hate the entitlement attitude where,
sure,
you know, I should just be able to listen to whatever I want for free. You know, who cares? It's morally bankrupt and philosophically bankrupt to me. It's just, I can't stand it. And I think that's been at the forefront of my mind on this topic for a long time.
Yeah, I can tell. And now I'm curious to see what the next thing is.
It's probably going to be Apple Music, which really is just, at best, is bringing a lot of existing things together under one roof.
Right, which is clearly part of Apple's plan. I mean, they said exactly that at WWDC. Mm-hmm. They want to bring all these things together, sure.
And I think that we're going to see Apple Music be a thing. I do think that there's a lot riding on it, in particular Connect. That's the ability for artists to connect with fans by uploading content directly.
Right.
You know, behind the scenes videos, interviews, messages. I'd love to see actually like a bunch of B-sides or alternate mixes and things like that. That's, I'm always interested in that sort of thing.
It's the way I see that component of Apple Music, it's almost like the liners from LPs, where there'd be like behind the scenes photos and some commentary and stuff. And now that's become the artist social part of Apple Music.
Right. And, you know, and you can get that sort of thing on artists' websites and certainly on YouTube and stuff. There are other places to get that. But, you know, again, Apple bringing it under one roof, that could end up bringing a lot of value if artists embrace it and if they embrace it the right way.
Yes.
Yeah, if they're truly bringing us new stuff to engage us as fans, and not just seeing it as like a promotional vehicle, you know, like, hey, everybody, just want to let you know that my new album is going to drop on. I mean, that's that's not the thing that's going to really be engage people.
No, I mean, of course, people will want to know when the new album is going to drop, but that's not enough to keep people engaged in that type of a service.
It's not enough to turn the Connect side of Apple Music into a thing. And that's the deal. I mean, you know, we're going to need to see some really interesting. We're going to need to see some really interesting stuff. I'm hoping that we do.
Yeah, I'm betting that Apple is working with at least some artists to make sure that they have compelling content, because Apple wants us to succeed.
It's true. It's very true. Yeah, and hopefully that'll act as a template for other artists. Hey, are you on Twitter?
I am. Are you on Twitter?
I am. I'm TMO Brian. That's Brian with a Y.
And I'm Jay Gamut with a J.
So people could theoretically follow us on the Twitter.
They could. And they could hear us say witty things.
Or well, they probably won't hear it so much.
Well, what if they're using a voiceover or something?
Mostly pedantic.
Mostly. All right. So people could see and read or potentially hear us say witty things. And by witty, I mean, we sure think we're pretty darn funny.
Yes. Yes, we do. We share that. That trait. Now, I don't know how many other people share that same belief, but we share that trait where we think that we're funny.
Well, you know, sometimes, Brian, we have to go with what we've got.
It's true. Goodness, it's true. All right, how about we take a look at some cool things?
I think that sounds awesome. I want to talk about the skateboard thing.
Oh, the hoverboard?
Yeah.
The video I posted?
Yes. That's just awesome.
Geoduck doesn't think it's real. Did you read his comments?
I'm okay with him being a non-believer. Landrew brings all in.
Landrew. I don't think that Lexus is going to muck about with something that's fake. I don't think they're going to risk that.
No, I mean, if they're doing something for an April Fool's joke, okay, but...
That's dangerous.
That's really dangerous. Yes, it is.
Well, let's tell people what it is.
Oh, sure. Okay, so you found this awesome video that Lexus, the car maker, did, where they show that they have designed and have a prototype of a hoverboard, like a Back to the Future hoverboard, so a skateboard that doesn't need wheels.
Right.
And it looks really cool.
It looks really cool. Where did Geoducks? Oh, goodness. I saw it come through in... I'm going to have to fix this. All right, we have a caching issue. So what Geoduck posted was, nope, not real. It would have no friction, so it would slide in any direction, making it unrideable. Secondly, because it has no friction, it would not set up. It would not set in one spot. The slightest slope or puff of wind or eddy current would push it around. A nice bit of CG or model work here, but it's not real.
I have to be mostly pedantic on you.
Okay. But
Gooey Duck.
It is Gooey Duck, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Thank you. I've been calling him Geoduck for years.
It's your pet name for him.
Well, it's how he's... Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, but Gooey Duck has a point, which is there's the whole friction issue, and how are you going to keep the hoverboard in place so that you can step on it? And my guess is that if you've designed it with some sort of gyroscopic system inside, where it can help keep itself stable. I'm just tossing ideas out.
Yeah, it would require... Well, you know, it's interesting. All right, so the video shows the device hovering, and it's, according to what they're saying, it's magnetic levitation. And they're using... you know, it's got vapor coming off of it. It's you know...
Clearly, so it looks like it's super cooled.
Yeah, it definitely looks like it's super cooled. This has been around for years. This is the first time we've seen someone try to apply it to a hoverboard, and they told, I think Engadget ended up reaching out to him, and they said that the skate park that this video was filmed at had a layer of metal underneath the concrete,
which would work to give the magnet something to push against.
Exactly. And it's a good thing I'm going to take that out so that no one hears me stumble over my words.
I know. I mean, we can't have that. We have an image to maintain.
Exactly. So the video ends with the rider. So, you know, you see this guy on a skateboard, regular skateboard, and, you know, then he stops it and he walks over to the hoverboard and he puts his foot on it, and that's where the video ends. So we don't actually see him ride it. Lexus claims that it's rideable. We haven't yet actually seen that, but Lexus claims that. And there is no doubt that it would require new, I know you love this word, paradigms, to ride it. Because it would not ride on like a skateboard for exactly what Gooey Duck says, which is there's no friction. So, mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't stand on it the same way. You wouldn't even push off the same way, because, you know, you push off even slightly wrong, you're going in a direction that you didn't anticipate.
Yes, that's true.
It would be a lot different, especially at this early stage of development, where there's, you know, there's nothing, There's nothing besides the levitation to control the levitation.
Right. Yeah. So I would like to see a video of someone actually writing this.
I would too. I would too. But, you know, it's... I really don't think it's fake. I think that Lexus would have a lot to lose saying that it was working on something like this and for it not to be done. Besides, there are other people out there that are like there's a levitating motorcycle, but it has to ride on a track.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, this technology, this isn't magic. This is hardcore science, and the ability to levitate using super cooled
magnets.
Yeah, it's not just magnets. I want it. Is it like superconductors, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember either, but this stuff's been around for a while.
Okay, there's another reason why Lexus doing this as a joke thing would be a bad idea. And that's because I think it was April Fool's Day, was it last year? Where some company did a whole video about the hoverboards that they had designed and built. And they had... oh, I hate when I forget an actor's name. Back to the Future. Doc Brown. Yeah.
Lloyd.
There you go. Lloyd from Taxi.
Lloyd. No. He was, what was his name?
It was Jim. His name was Jim.
It was Jim, Taxi. Yeah.
Anyhow, I feel
what
really...
What does a yellow light mean?
So I feel bad because...
Lloyd Christensen? Lloyd?
I can't remember. Anyhow, they had him in the video, and he's talking about these hoverboards, and they're showing them in action. And then they have... see, I'm doing great with names. The
Christopher
skateboarder.
Christopher Lloyd.
Goodness
gracious.
Who's the big-name skateboarder? Anyhow, that guy. They had him riding the skateboard.
Okay.
And they did this really elaborate video showing the skateboard in action and showing popular people riding it, and it was done really, really well.
You're thinking of Tony Hawk?
Tony Hawk. They had Tony Hawk on it.
Got it.
And it turns out that it was all a joke. And it was an April Fool's thing, but it was done very elaborately, very well. For Lexus to follow up with this, if it's it'd be
very Me Too.
Yes. And I don't think they're going to do that.
There's a difference between something being produced as a joke and a company making something saying that this is part of its R&D research group.
Sure. You know, even if they're not going to bring a hoverboard to market... The fact that they're working on something as part of their R&D is really cool, because what they learn from what they're doing gives them practical applications in other areas.
Right.
You know, maybe this is something that ultimately ends up being used like in warehouses. So you can move boxes and stuff around much easier.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, there are actually all kinds of practical applications for being able to do this for real, yo.
Yo.
All right, we're out of time.
Ah, man, if only we had more time, because there's other cool things we could talk about.
Yeah, there are other cool things we could talk about, but we're out of time.
Well, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
See, our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
Hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.